Welcome to Conversations with Big Rich. This is an interview-style podcast. These interviewed are all involved in the off-road industry. Being involved, like all of my guests are, is a lifestyle, not just a job. I talk to past, present, and future legends, as well as business owners, employees, media, and land use warriors, men and women who have found their way into this exciting and addictive lifestyle we call off-road. We discuss their personal history, struggles, successes, and reboots. We dive into what drives them to stay active and off-road. We all hope to shed some light on how to find a path into this world that we live and love and call off-road.
Whether you're crawling the Red Rocks of Moab or hauling your toys to the trail, Maxxis has the tires you can trust for performance and durability. Four wheels or two. Maxxis tires are the choice of champions because they know that whether for work or play, for fun or competition, Maxxis tires deliver. Choose Maxxis. Tread victoriously.
Have you seen 4LO magazine yet? 4LO magazine is a high-quality, well-written, four-wheel drive-focused magazine for the enthusiast market. If you still love the idea of a printed magazine, something to save and read at any time, 4LO is the magazine for you. 4LO cannot be found in stores, but you can have it delivered to your home or place of business. Visit 4LOmagazine.com to order your subscription today. On today's episode of Conversations with Big Rich, we have the Ricks. That's Rick Dermo and Rick Gersh. They're out of Dove Creek, Colorado. They were quite the team back in the days of rock crawling. We're going to get into all of that and more about these two. Ricks, both of you?
Yes.
Thank you so much for coming on board.
No problem. We enjoy doing this.
Okay. Gersh, you there?
Yes, sir.
Okay. There. I just want to make sure you're still there. You didn't sneak out the back. All right. So let's jump right in. You're both in Dove Creek. Did you both start off in that area?
Yes. I did. This is Rick Dermo. I've been here all my life. Went to Phoenix in the winters. My family were snowbirds, so we'd go down there and come back in the summer and farm.
Right. And it's always been a farming life, right?
Yes. Yep.
And Rick, how about you? Gersh, how about you?
My family came to Dove Creek when I was 10 years old. My dad worked for the State Highway Department, got transferred here. And I've been here ever since. So here about 59 years, people are starting to look at me as one of theirs now.
Finally. Yeah. You're finally a local. Is that it?
Right. There you go.
Well, I can understand that small community thing. It really is. It takes a while, you know, to assimilate yourself into the local customs, as it may be, even if you were there for 59 years. So let's talk about those early years. Dermo, what about growing up there, you know, on the farm? What were you guys farming and what was life like for you then?
I started running a tractor by myself when I was 12 years old. So I didn't, we did wheat and pinto beans. And so I got to run a combine when I was 14. And even at that age, we'd put in 10, 12 hour days and learned good work ethics, learned how to weld and cut and fab equipment that I tore up.
Right.
Because I was in a hurry.
As most kids.
Yep.
So, besides working on the farm for, you know, 10 to 12 hours a day, 14 hours a day, what else did you do besides school?
Yeah. Oh, when I was younger, I started riding motocross back in 74 when I was 14. Got my first CR125 Elsinore, the first year they came out. Got into riding motocross and retired from that in 82. The last 3 years, I rode the outdoor national circuit, AMA.
Wow.
First year, I rode 125s. Second year, I rode 250s. And then my sponsor brought out an open bike for me to ride, a 500, and said, see what you can do on this. And first event I went to, local event, I won. So I kind of got hooked on that, riding the 500s. Loved them. But I ended up hurting my lower back, and that kind of put me out of the motocross scene, compressing discs. And that, I felt good a few years after I quit racing. And then it kind of came back the last couple of years when I was rock crawling.
Right. Understand. And so you're, if you said you were 14 and that was 74, that means you were born in 60.
59.
Okay. So you're real close to my age. You're a little younger.
Oh, thank goodness.
Yeah. I was born in 58. But I basically quit working except for, you know, well, I basically quit working now. So you still have a farm to run.
Yes. Yes.
So Gersh, what about you? You moved there when you were 10. You said you've been there 59 years. So you're 69. You're a little older?
Yes. Yep. Just a little older.
Okay.
No, my, you know, I spent most of my summers as a kid till I was 14, up in Ouray, Colorado. My grandparents owned a gas station and a restaurant in Ouray. And I would pump gas and help my grandfather do mechanic work from the time I was 6 until I was 14.
Okay. So you learned how to wrench early.
Right. Yeah, I learned, doing a lot of menial stuff. Some of that, like straightening nails. I got learned straightened a lot of nails. It's some minor wrenching, but then after, you know, as my summers went from spending time in Ouray back here, then I actually worked the summers for Rick's dad and uncle.
Okay. Is that how you guys became friends? I know there's an age difference there. So typically, you know, if Rick's that much younger, say when Rick is, you know, 8 or 10 years old, not normally going to be hanging out with a 15-year-old. In most situations,
Rick has an older brother that's my age, and that we hung out a lot together. So we were around each other all the time, even though, yeah, your analogy with the age difference is correct. But yeah, we've been around each other forever.
Okay. So I have to ask.
Rick's younger brother was my age. His name was Danny.
Okay.
And we hung out together. So as a families, our families went to Lake Powell. We went water skiing a bunch and fishing stuff down there during the summers.
Okay. So. That makes a lot of sense then. Excellent. So then working together, working on the farm, the life there, it's not big city at all. It never was, and it probably never will be, but there seems like it could be a lot to do for kids. Maybe not to get so much in trouble, but at least a lot of things to do. Am I correct?
Yes. You know, a lot of outdoor sports, hunting, fishing, rafting down the Dolores River. We live, 3.5 miles, 4 miles from the Dolores River. So as kids, we went down the river and floated down there on tubes, you know, and swam in the swimming holes. And back then there was drive-in movie theaters and we'd go out to those. Just basic, good, small town life. And about everybody in town, all the kids had motorcycles. A bunch of us would ride. The police would chase us when we rode across the streets, but they couldn't catch us.
Couldn't catch you, but they knew where you lived.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Yeah, that's true.
See, I grew up in a town of like 50,000 people. And even though it was really big, you know, quite a bit bigger, it seemed that everybody knew my parents. And I couldn't get away with nothing. I'd come home and my dad goes, yeah, so I understand you did this today. And I'm like, how in the hell did he find that out? So it happens, yeah, big towns and little towns.
Yeah, our town's what, 750, 800? Mm-hmm. The whole county is like 2,500 is all. And yeah, pretty much the same thing. We'd do something, our folks would know about it before we got home. And I told my kids, I said, you know, we're going to know when you guys do something. And when they got a little older, sure enough, we got a couple calls and we were in town. And my daughter's like, well, how'd you know I did that? I just did that like 3 minutes ago. And it wasn't that big of a deal afterwards, I found out. So
right. So let's talk about school. You know, working the farm, there's things you got to do all year long besides, you know, just the planting and the harvest season. But what was school like, say, Dermo first?
I only went to school here until third grade, mid-year of third grade. And then my folks bought a house down in Phoenix. And so Lyle and I went down there in the winters. Like I said, my parents were snowbirds, wanted to get out of the snow here. So we went down there. And basically, I grew up down there in the winters and then came back and farmed in the summers.
Okay, but, so school time.
That's why I ended up riding motocross down there, because you can do it year-round in Phoenix.
Right. So, okay. And did that happen all the way through, like, high school?
Yes. Yes, okay. It did. I went to, ended up going to Washington High, played football there. And that was the only sport. Well, I went out for basketball freshman year, but I really stunk at it. So I just can't dribble. So I just stuck with motocross and ended up playing football is the only thing I did. And then raced the rest of the time of the year. But I had some friends. One of them played for the Browns, Mike Pagel. He was our quarterback in high school.
Nice.
So, and then the first year I went to school at a private school because mom and dad didn't know the city of Phoenix or the school system. And I ended up going to school with Ernie Banks's boys, Joey and Jerry Banks.
Wow.
And Craig Jackson, that does the Barrett Jackson car auction. Yeah, he's in my class. And Craig also used to ride motocross.
Okay. Wow. Interesting. And Gersh, how about you? You, most of your school years or informative years, you might say, were there in Dove Creek then?
Yeah, that's right, Rich. I went all the way through 12th grade here in Dove Creek. In those days, we had a few more people around, you know, big classes of 30. I think my graduating class was probably 28. Things have changed quite a bit now. We have a lot smaller classes, a lot fewer people in the area. But yeah, all my school time was done here in Dove Creek.
Okay. And
a lot of those kids were, we had uranium mines here at that time. And so there were a lot of kids that went to school here that their folks were miners.
Right. Okay. That makes sense. Not just the farming community.
Right. Yes. And Rick mined for several years.
Interesting. Was that mining? That's not like pick and shovel. You went in there with equipment, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, you have equipment, Rich, but you have a 135-pound jack leg you haul to the face, drill holes, load with powder, shoot it, come in with loaders and load it up, and then some little shovel work at the end to get things tidied up. But yeah, like Rick said, there was a tremendous amount of people in this area due to the uranium boom in the 70s and 80s. It just was totally different community.
I would imagine,
That's where Rick really learned to stack rock and do it perfectly.
Well, I was gonna say that's why Rick was, you know, Gersh was the spotter.
He was probably one of the strongest spotters out there besides BZ's spotter, George.
George was good.
But Rick and I, we were at Cheap Safari one year. We were up on Upper Eldorado before we even started rock crawling or rock, you know, thinking about competing. We were rock crawling at the time, just in our samurais. And we were on Upper Eldorado Jeep Safari, and Rich Hudson was there and at the gate, and we were watching him stack rock. And Rick was commenting on how he stacked them in there a certain way. And then when Rich went to climb over, not one rock moved. He had them wedged in against each other. And so that's where Rick came up with his being an awesome spotter.
Okay.
For stacking rock.
And how did you guys get into Wheeling Samurai? So what was the process there?
It was Rick. He got me going.
Well, and it was my son, actually, that got me going.
Really?
He lived in Farmington at the time. And, you know, if you live in Farmington, you like to wheel. The opportunities are endless.
True. So then that's interesting. So you guys were late in life wheelers.
Oh, yeah. Well, we had four-wheel drives when we were growing up here in school and stuff. You know, we'd go out in mud bog out on the county roads and see who could get through the deepest snow drifts and stuff in the winter and get stuck most of the time and have to get pulled out or called dad to bring a tractor to drag us out. But so we did that type of wheeling, but not really any of the rock stuff to say until Jared got us introduced into it. And we went to our first event was Farmington, wasn't it? When we watched. And I don't, was that a U-Rock or what was it?
I think it might have been a U-Rock event we went to and we watched.
Yeah, and that's when we saw Peter Wells there,
Okay.
Farmer from over in San Luis Valley. And we watched them, and Rick said, you know what? I think we can do this. So after the event, that's what happened. We went home and started building and got into it.
That's awesome. What do you remember from that first event besides Peter?
A lot of rollovers.
Yeah, Farmington's known for that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And how that rock is a little sandier, a little slicker, you know, doing the bump to get up things right. Instead of just crawling. Yeah. Yeah. Just some stuff like that.
That and the teamwork. There's such, you know, Pete and Frank worked so good together. They were early on the epitome of guys that really worked together. They talked to each other. Yeah, it was really fun to watch them. Learned a lot from those guys. And, you know, both very personable guys.
And watched them hang off the side of their car back then.
Yeah, yeah, and that's the other thing, too, being able to hang off the side of the car and try to push it over and stuff. That
Yeah, those days before safety rules. I mean, lap yeah. belts, no helmets.
Right. Yeah.
Well, it was the kind of stuff we did on our own. It was just like doing our own stuff, only with an audience and having some cones out there.
Right. And what did you think when you went out to your first event to compete and all of a sudden those cones that when you're looking at them from down below look like they're really wide apart and then you have to drive through them? What was that like?
We thought you moved him in on us.
Well, and little Rich was such an awesome course setter back then. I mean, he was like, what, 15 years old?
A little older, but yes.
Yeah, he did such a good job setting courses. Things that we didn't see until we got up there to the course, like, oh, my gosh, I think we can do this. But and we started out with a Samurai, had a 1.6 liter and I wanted to put an automatic in it, and I had an old Chevy Chevelle sitting out here on its side, and I was looking at it one day because it had a small transmission. I thought, man, that looks like the same bolt pattern as that 1.6 Tracker engine. I pulled it out, and it bolted up, and it was a T180. I remember that, and it fit. Yeah, so that's how we came up with an automatic and the Samurai, and then took a front Dana 44 and put it in the rear so we had rear steer, which made it easier for around the cones.
Right. And
I still hit them with a rear steer, but yeah.
And what kind of wheelbase did you have? Like it couldn't still have been 82 inches.
No, I think we were 100 or 105, yeah. Something like that.
Okay.
Somewhere in there.
One of the things when you said you had a Chevelle sitting there on its side, I know there's a whole bunch of hot rod guys that just cringed when they heard that.
Yeah, there wasn't much left of it. It was pretty crunched up. Okay. Yeah, there wasn't much usable. So the motor was already gone out of it. So the tranny was sitting there and just the A-arms and rear axle and some tires. That was pretty much it. The glass was even broken out of all the windows. So, yeah, it had seen its better days.
So but, then you guys, the first competition you went to, was it Which event series did you run in?
It was Cal Rocks.
Okay.
There at Farmington, Cal Rocks was running the same time UROC was, I think, at the same event that day.
Yeah, it was actually the ARCA event, the last of the ARCA events.
That's it, ARCA. I said, yeah, ARCA, that's right.
Yeah.
Well, it was ARCA that we went and saw the year before.
Right. Yep. Okay.
Yeah, thanks for shaking the cobwebs loose up here.
No, that's all right. I get to do this. I've done this for 3 years now and talked to a lot of people about those days. So some of it has fallen back into place. I was talking to somebody this morning at a car show, four-wheel drive car show. And in fact, Bob Sweeney from Jeepers Jamboree, and he was talking to somebody. He goes, well, if you had a Cal Rocks buggy, this guy would know whose it was. And the guy looks at me and goes, oh, okay. You know, it was this color and this. And I'm like, Bob, you know how many years and beers ago that was?
Yeah. Yep.
Years and beers.
Well, in that first event we went to that we watched before we got into crawling, I had no idea who Shannon Campbell was. He was standing over there, and we ended up going over and talking to him. That's what I liked about the events. You could talk to all the drivers and stuff and learn. And Shannon was really a great guy. Very personable to everybody. So,
yeah. Right. Yeah, and that's one of the great things about rock crawling. You know, everybody's all together and nearby. It's not like racing where everybody's spread out and you don't see everybody all day long. I mean, you're competing and you're right with everybody.
Yeah. And something Rick and I always tried to do when we were at an event, after we got through crawling, doing our obstacle, our course, and we'd go up to the next one to watch what was going on there. We'd walk around and talk to the people in the crowd there too. And Rick would go explain things, why somebody's doing something, you know, kind of just to help the sport grow, tell them what was going on and why they were doing this or that. So he was great for the sport.
So how long did you compete in the Samurai?
We just did the 1 year, didn't we? We only did a couple of events and then that was it. And then I built the, the green right-hand drive car with the Subaru engine.
Okay.
And
what transmission was in that? The C4.
That had a C4 in it.
So how many adapters do you know, Rich, that go from a Subaru to a C4?
You'd go right down to
Napa Auto Parts and they'll have them on the shelf.
Yeah, it was farmerized.
Farmerized.
I had the transmission out of the Subaru, and I found out which one had the smaller output shaft. And so I drilled a hole in a piece of plate, slid it over that, marked all the holes on the bell housing. Then I drilled it out to the next size that was the C4, slid it over that, and matched all the holes, or turned the holes where they didn't line up with the others, marked all them, and then I made the plate.
Nice.
Just that easy.
And you cut it out with a torch, right?
Pretty much so, yep. And then we had to fab up the starter so it would work. But I found the ring gear on that C180. We had some old farm machinery up here, and I was looking at the ring gear, the teeth cut, and went and started pulling starters off a bunch of them, found one that the ring gear count was just right for the starter, and put that on there. And why it was a right-hand drive, because watching your events, all the cars were left-hand drives, and the obstacles, it seemed like on the right hand, you couldn't see a lot of the stuff that Little Rich would set up, and people were catching cones and stuff. So we thought outside the box, made a right-hand drive, so we had an advantage.
Really? And that's interesting. I hadn't thought of that.
And it also had, we could lengthen the wheelbase, 10 inches?
Mm-hmm.
Eight or 10 inches, yeah. I had real long splines on the rear drive shaft, and we just kicked the four-wheel drive out into two and be driving. I could slide the back end out a little bit to get a little longer wheelbase. But that only lasted 2 years.
Was that a frame lengthening then?
No, not frame, just the three links. Okay. And the three links in the the drive shaft.
Okay. So yeah. Between obstacles, you could lengthen it or shorten it.
Or on the course, we could do it. Yeah.
Oh, on the course.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
God, I don't remember that. But, years and beers.
We had all sorts of stuff. And that first year, we couldn't afford bead locks. We didn't have any sponsors. We got some BFG tires, but Rick, we were kept losing sidewalls and stuff, only around 2 pounds of air. And Rick came out the shop one day with this stuff called Right Stuff from Napa. And it's for,
yeah, like a sealant. Yeah.
Yeah. So we put them on the beads, put the tires on, aired them up, and got the beads set, and then let the air out, let them set overnight. And we went to the next comp, ran 2 pounds of air, never lost a bead. And everybody always asked how we did that without bead locks. Well, that was it. It's called Right Stuff. And when we got our new tires halfway through the season, I went to break them down. I couldn't get the tires off the rims.
I was going to ask.
So I took it to our local shop and let them, they changed tractor tires and stuff. So I let them break them down. It took them over an hour to get all four broke down.
Did they ask what, this, put, what that stuff was?
Right, we did put Right Stuff back on those too. Because we still didn't have a sponsor.
Oh, Lord. So what was your means of travel back there from event to event?
We had a diesel pickup, didn't we?
And a 7.3 of yours.
Yeah, and we had my brother-in-law's car hauler trailer we used. I ended up with it because when we had the green card, took it out, first tested it, we broke it on the first obstacle. I think we broke a rear axle.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to drive out there at Farmington, and when I went around some rocks to get in so we could load the car, I mangled the fenders up in the back end, and so I ended up having to buy the trailer. And it was a brand new trailer.
Yeah, I don't remember the name of the obstacle we were on, but there were a lot of guys pretty impressed that Rick had a four-door diesel pickup with a gooseneck trailer up there.
They didn't think you could get it in there.
That's that farmer ingenuity.
Yeah. Yep.
So yeah. What was your favorite place to compete?
I had a couple I really liked. I loved Farmington, Chokecherry, and I loved Cedar City. I liked the hard rock.
Right.
You know, that you can hang on the side of the wall there or yeah, climb incredible steep climbs or drop off big ledges. I love the rock. I didn't like the ones. Well, my worst one I didn't like, and sorry, Washington, but you know.
Yeah, Goldendale.
I didn't like Goldendale. It seemed like I was farming again. I had so much dirt on my face and stuff from spinning in on the rock and the dirt.
You know what? That dirt is still there. It is still dusty.
Yeah. But and the other place I liked was Globe. Really liked Globe. That was a cool course.
Right.
Yeah.
Were you there? You were there for the rain event, weren't you?
Oh, yeah. The flooding?
Yes.
Yeah. That was pretty fun.
That was a great event.
Yeah. I think that's the one that Shannon had the rotary at, wasn't it?
I just remember Shannon coming to me on Saturday morning and going, Rich, don't make me drive across the creek today. I'll drown. Cause it was drive and the rain was over the top of, like 39 inch tires.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he had that rotary engine then. I think that only lasted one event, maybe two. He had to keep it wound up so high.
Right.
And I had one of those cars too with a rotary, but yeah. it never made it onto the course. It was an IFS IRS car.
Right. That was the red and blue one, red or purple?
It was a yellow one.
The yellow one. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Independent front and rear. The front were like swing arms that ran forward instead of A-arms.
Okay.
Yeah. And it had a rotary, and yeah, you had to keep it wrapped up to even climb anything. It didn't have the torque you need for crawling.
So was that another car that was designed, you know, farmer ingenuity?
All of them are farmer engineered. Yeah.
There's a lot of ingenious stuff came out of this Quonset out here, Rich.
A lot of people didn't know were on the car.
But so I have to ask, how much of that stuff is still sitting around out there?
The IFS IRS car, the frame's still sitting out here, but that's it. Everything else is gone.
Okay.
Yeah, I sold it to get to build the next car and so on. Yeah, had to at the time.
Right.
But yeah, I built a steering system one time, and Shannon Campbell, we were at an event, and he walked by and he looked at it and he said, "Where did you come up with that?" And I said, "Well, it's farmerized." He laughed about it. And I saw him here a few years ago, something he had on one of his cars. I said, "How'd you come up with that idea, Shannon?" He looked at me and grinned, said, "Farmerized." So I'm glad he's using that technique.
You know, back in those early days, there was a lot of farmerizing going on.
Oh, yeah. Yep. And that's what was so fun about in the early years. There were so many different vehicles and different ideas, different tires.
Yeah, a lot of testing and technology, you know, it just people trying.
Yeah. Yeah, back then, ingenuity was a bigger player than money, really.
True. Very true.
Yeah. Aftermarket wasn't there.
And now everything that truly works, there's somebody you can call that has parts sitting on the shelf somewhere.
Right. And that's what kind of takes away from the fun of the whole aspect of crawling, I think, because everybody can buy it instead of building it.
Interesting concept. I guess for the guys that are definitely home builders, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we were always trying to think outside the box on everything we did on each car, what we liked, what we didn't like. We had on the rear axles, I put hooks on the rear axles on the wheel, on the center of the hub, so we could hook our rope on there. Mm-hmm. And so Rick could pull my back end around uphill. You know, if we needed to burn uphill with the rear, since we didn't have rear steel, we could do that. But I think Little Rich frowned on that. And I think the next event we were at, that cost us points or something. He just sucked all the fun out of it.
So what was the progression for the next car? You had the yellow one. It never made it out. Was that because
the green one? Well, we actually had two green ones.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And the first one was a single seat, and we sat in the middle of it. The second green car was the right-hand drive. That's right. And the first one's the one that had the rear axle that extended.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, the Subaru didn't extend. It was I don't remember what motor we had in that first car.
I'm thinking it was a 1.6 in that first car, too.
Oh, it was. We did have a Samurai engine in the first green car.
Because that's what we had the most of, was Samurai stuff.
Yeah. And we had a Samurai transfer case, mm-hmm, that Rick worked on, and it was a twin stick. Hmm. Remember, you put that, yeah, you changed that so we could do a front, yeah, burn or a rear burn with that Samurai transfer case. When Rick had it apart and I looked in there, the sprocket that ran the front axle, it looked like the bicycle sprocket. Little tiny thin thing. And I was like, how is that thing going to hold up with these? Well, were they 38s then?
Probably.
Yeah, 36ers or 38s. Yeah.
But it held up.
We never had a transfer case problem.
Mm. There you go.
And then on to the supercharged one.
Uh-huh. Right? Yeah, then we, after the two green cars, I was down at Shannon's shop one day, and when I was in Phoenix, and looked up there, and he had a chassis sitting up on top. and asked him what he was going to do with that chassis. And he said, it's yours. So I loaded it up in my pickup and brought it back. But I had it in the pickup when I went down to watch you guys' event in Tucson.
Okay.
I think it was Tucson. And I had that chassis sitting in the back of my pickup then. And we took it back up, brought it back up here, and it was set up for the Ecotec engine with a Power Glide and an Atlas transfer case. Mm-hmm. We put a supercharged V6 in it with a 700R4 and an Atlas. And we were at Jeep Safari, and Shannon walked past my car, and he stopped and looked, and he goes, what the heck? How did you get that 700R4 and that supercharged in that chassis? And so, oh, it fits. It just, we had to cut some stuff out, put it in, weld it back together, but we got it in there. And that car was fast off the line. It was quick. Great car. That was probably my favorite car out of all of them.
Best power to weight ratio.
Yep.
It really hooked up.
It did.
So was that one that you raced XRA in?
Yeah, but we crawled in it with it too. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we did both events with that car. We had the gear ratio, the XRA, you know, it wasn't that fast. So with that 700R4, we had gears for either thing we wanted to do without changing out the third members. So we did go through some parts, though, with the ARBs. We kept losing springs on the ARBs, and Chris over there finally got us some different springs for it, and we never had problems after that. Took care of it. And I think I might have been shifting it in and out while I was on the throttle. Could have been a little bit. I don't know. I have a throttle problem. Put it that way.
Or you have a right foot problem?
Pretty much that, too. Yeah. Yeah.
That's where all the weight is?
Oh, yeah. And back then, I was drinking Monster Energies in between courses and stuff. And I was getting a little hyper, and I was overdriving corners and on the throttle over rocks a little too much. And Rick said, I need to quit the Monster Energy stuff. So we did and drove a lot better then.
That was a good thing to do.
Monster.
No, it's, you know, hey, those drinks, I swear there should be an age limit. After a certain age, you shouldn't drink them anymore.
Oh, yeah.
It does funky stuff to your body.
I could feel my heart pounding and stuff, and I had the jitters. Rick was like, Rick, look at your hands. And I'm sitting there, my hands are shaking. I'm like, oh, my gosh. I have no idea.
Exactly.
But, yeah, and I loved crawling. I really loved doing the crawling. But the climbing in and out of the window, twisting my body to get in the window, was really hurting my back. My legs would go numb a little bit, my feet and stuff. And that's pretty much why I had to hang it up. I didn't want to have back surgery, but I felt good after I quit for a few years. You know, it took a little while for everything to relax, I guess. I don't know.
Settle back in, right?
Yeah, but I haven't had any problems with my back since, so that's good.
That's good. We've missed you, but I'd rather you be healthy.
Oh, so would I. Yep. I miss the crawling. And I really, really loved that last year when I got the call from Shannon and Tammy to drive the Bailey's car that last year.
And, right. Oh, yeah. The year you won the national championship.
Yeah. Lucky.
Not lucky.
It was the course. I mean, the area I really liked too, Cedar City. I love that rock. We were the only ones to do that big wall. And years ago, I remember guys being able to do the wall, but the banners were closer this event than what they were before. And I remember seeing that. So you didn't get the run out like you needed to make that climb. Where before the other events, those guys could make the climb, but they had a little bigger run out with where the banner was. They could back up a little further.
Right, and get a more of a bump at it. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah. That last event, that one that we're talking about, the Nationals, that was Cody Folsom spotted you too, right?
Right. Yeah. And I remember reading talking with Cody about I think you were allowed to be a little less than halfway out of the course with two tires. Is that correct? Or is it one tire?
You were not supposed to be more than 50%. The rules now are no more. If two tires go out of bounds, you're done.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Nope. Do you hear that, Rich? You're sucking the fun right out of that rock crawler.
I'm sucking the fun out of it?
Yeah. We can't twist the rules a little. No, that's how we made that climb. When I made the climb up the hill and let it reject me, it forced me back, and Cody stopped me before the car was 50% past the banners.
Okay.
That gave me a little extra run out. And if I wouldn't have had that, we couldn't have made that climb. It's interpreting the rules, I guess they call it.
Yep, absolutely. So let's talk about you raced KOH as well. You raced XRA. And
yes.
You were crawling some of that at the same time. And then right. You traveled pretty extensively, didn't you, with XRA?
Yeah. Yep. We ended up back in Jellicoe a couple times, and we did, Missouri, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Hannibal, yeah. Missouri.
Hannibal, right. Missouri.
Yeah. And I didn't know what chiggers were until that event. Yeah.
Lovely little creatures, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. And, that we had a pretty good little spot on Burning Rubber TV. They came and interviewed us at the race there that day, and you can still find it on there. I looked the other day and it was on there. So it just got to hunt it harder. But, yeah, that's where somebody told us I wasn't right in my mind.
It took them that long.
Yeah.
The park owner, bet the promoter that nobody could even make any of the, courses that he had set up. He said there's no way people can even go this, much less have a time on it. And Rick was able to clean every one of them, made them look easy.
Very good. Very good. Yet Tom was one of those guys, the park owner there in Hannibal, that was, he liked to set things up that he just thought people could not do. Where I always wanted to set things that I felt people figured they couldn't do, but I thought that there was a line to do it if they could find it.
Yeah. And that's what was great about your events. They were tough obstacles, but they were doable. Just had to see their line.
Right.
And sometimes they're oblivious to everybody, but that's where Rick and I, Rick did a really super good job of finding the lines on the climbs and the descents. I'll never forget the one in Congress. You had a bonus line coming off of a ledge that was undercut, and it was probably what, a 12-14 foot drop, and it was undercut back. And we sat there and watched Becca Webster go off at first. She went, when her front end hit, she gassed it. She stand on her nose, flipped upside down, and timed out. And about everybody that went over did the same thing. Shannon went over, rolled, ended up on his side about, 5 feet from the finish line. And at that time, you only had to have one tire across the line. And he had the flu, and he and his spotter worked and worked trying to get the car across the line. They couldn't. They finally timed out. And one of the guys with us went over and told Shannon, why don't you just take a lug wrench, take that tire off and roll it through there. You would have timed it.
That wouldn't have worked.
Well, the rules didn't say anything about a lug wrench and just said the tire had to cross. But anyway, Rick and I talked about that. and watching everybody, and we noticed that their rear wheels were up on that ledge when they gassed it, and that was throwing the car over. So we just kicked the rear end out and just drove off of it and didn't have any problems.
Yeah, I actually remember that one. I know what you're talking about.
That was a cool obstacle.
Then you raced KOH as well, didn't you, King of the Hammers?
Yes.
And yes. What car did you start racing in that in?
That was the IFS car.
Okay.
That had a that had an LS2 in it, 8-1 header, and we had an Atlas in it. And at the time when we built the IFS, Shannon and I both built the first IFS cars, and we won the first event with it in Moab. And when we built the car, we didn't make the tabs. Randy Rod from Jimmy's 4x4 gave us the chassis, built the car for us, the chassis, and then we put everything together. Peter Wells came over and helped me and Rick finish up some parts on the project. Peter welded up the headers for us, and it was a great car, but our mistake was not making the tabs heavy enough for the rear shocks. And when I got in the whoops, I probably passed in that first whoop section. I probably passed 15 cars, but it cost me. I broke the shocks off of them. But the car handled really good. That was the only downfall. I lasted the race about 20 minutes.
But you passed a bunch of people.
Oh, yeah. I think I started out like 67th or 70th, somewhere around there. And I passed a lot of people that short course time. But that was my first Hammers race. And then I went back one more time and co-drove with Cody Falsom in his little pickup. He did the Everyman Challenge.
Right.
And we were doing good. I think we were in second. We broke front axle. And it would have taken us too long to get the axle put in, and we would have timed out before we got to the next checkpoint. But
how was that on your back?
Terrible.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's a lot worse than twisting to get into a crawler.
Yeah, that was really hard on my back. You know, I had one other race I did, desert race, and it was down in Albuquerque. And went down there. I didn't have a car to drive in it. And Brian Shirley asked me if I wanted to drive his old Jeep that he had, or his old car from Randy Rod, one that he had, his older one. And he said, now the motor's about out on it, but, you know, just go drive it and have some fun. And so I talked Randy Rod into riding with me. And the trophy truck started ahead of us, and then we started. There was another group. Motorcycle started first, and then the trophy trucks. And there's only like 5 trophy trucks there. It wasn't a real big event. And then there was probably 10 of us, 10 or 12 of us that rock raced were there. And we started out, and on our first lap, Randy and I passed 2 of the trophy trucks through the rough section. We had to come in, get the hood pulled off, take a fire extinguisher, cool the radiator down, put some more antifreeze in it. We took off again, and Randy was having a blast. We were flying through the washes and the whoops until the motor burned up. And I asked Randy, I said, were you keeping an eye on the gauges? He goes, no, I was just watching the track and having fun. We ended up walking back to the pits, and we were on the very back of the course.
Nice.
So that was a good time. Thanks, Brian, for loaning us the car.
And I want to thank you, because the tow vehicle that you had back then was the was that red Volvo and the white trailer. And I'm still running that thing.
Oh, that was a great truck and trailer. I love that. Titled as a RV. We didn't have to stop the ports.
Yep.
Yeah, we got 9 miles, 9.5 miles a gallon with that towing. And that was the same as my diesel pickup with a, 26-foot Featherlite aluminum trailer with the car in it. So we got to sleep in the truck and trailer that way. A lot better setup.
Absolutely. Once we got that and started moving everything around the country in the semi, I called it the Taj Mahaler. It really was a life changer for us with the events. And
the IFS car would just fit in on top of the living room there over top.
Right.
We'd have to dump all the air out of those ORI struts to get it in there. But you probably saw the tire tracks on the wall in there on one side. That's where we fell off the ramps, and I was laying on the in there on the side in the car and had to drive it back out of the trailer on its side. Didn't get the ramp quite fastened down yet.
That's awesome.
Good times, though.
So
wouldn't trade it for anything.
So talk about some of the stories, maybe from when you were running with Brian Shirley and you guys were traveling. There had to be some good stories with you guys.
Oh, yeah. My son would go with Rick and Cindy, Rick's wife, Cindy, and my wife and I, and we had Bob Clayton and Chuck Thompson. They worked on our cars, and they worked with Rick at Kinder Morgan. So we'd take off on the weekends and go travel all night. We had drivers and stuff that could switch out. Made a lot of fun. We'd catch up. Brian was from Dodge City, so if we're going east, we'd catch them someplace en route. And it was always at a Cracker Barrel. It seemed like that's the only place they could find a park. My son hated Cracker Barrel. So and he still does. We can't get him to stop there at all. So yeah.
So what are you guys doing now?
Pardon me?
What are you doing now? What's the I know you're still working, both of you. Or Gersh, are you still working or are you retired now?
I quit a year ago.
Okay. And farming is still happening.
Yes.
But what are you guys doing for fun?
It's just my brother and I that farm. And my daughter helps us. My son used to help us, but he works up in Denver now. And so he comes down some, but once in a while I'll get him to run a piece of equipment for me. But my daughter lives just a quarter mile away from us, Kelly. So.
Okay.
I get her to help some. She was a good driver rock crawling and Drain never wanted to drive. He just wanted to ride and have fun. So, but yeah, as far as fun goes, we got side by sides. Rick's got a Terex. He got me into the side by side thing. And I've got a Can-Am Maverick, an older one. And my wife wants a 4-seater because we have grandkids now.
Right.
So, but, and we're building a cabin up at Groundhog Lake, which is about 30 miles straight east of Dove Creek. So okay. I spent all winter up there setting logs and we shoveled the house out 22 times this year and we had 30 inches of snow one time.
Wow.
And we had a total of 7 foot there while we were working of snow. And it still doesn't have a roof.
It's still so,
it's a work in progress probably for a couple of years.
So when you say you were shoveling the house out, you meant the interior of the house out as well.
Oh yeah. Interior of the house. Yeah. Yeah. We take the plywood off where the windows were. We didn't put the windows in yet, but we had the openings. We put plywood over to keep a lot of the snow out. Pull all that up and shovel it out the windows. It got old.
So when's it going to get finished?
I'm thinking 2029. I don't know. Oh, I'm hoping we can get into it late this summer. Depends on how much farming we got going and stuff.
So how many acres are you doing? You guys, you're doing all now, doing hay?
We have 9 pivots and all used to be under hay, but last 2 years we had drought and we only got a little bit of water and we ended up losing all fields except for 3. So we've got, 243. We got right at 400 acres of irrigated alfalfa is all. Everything else will be in beans or barley or wheat.
Okay.
Until we can get some new hay planted on those. We got them worked up. We just got to rotate them out into some other crop for a year.
Right.
And that hurt because we're all set up for alfalfa.
Okay. Yeah.
We raise between, it depends on a good year or bad year when we had all the pivots in. We'd have anywhere from 130 semi-loads to 150 semi-loads a year to ship out.
And where do most of those loads go? Which direction?
Texas.
Texas, huh? Okay.
Yeah, we have 2 dairies down there that buy the majority of our hay.
Oh, okay. Were those the ones just going into El Paso or somewhere else?
One of the dairies, he's got 5 or 6 dairies down there in the, my mind's blank right now. Sorry, Big
No
Rich,
worries. But, no worries.
Down in the Dublin area, there's one dairy man down there. He's got dairies there in New Mexico, California. Sometimes our loads will go into California for him.
Okay.
So it just depends. And then the other one is like the second largest dairy in Texas. So yeah, dairy owner.
Right.
So, yep.
Well, I hope that this year is much better for you than the last with the drought. I know that most of the West got plenty of water, but that we still have to, you know, hopefully everybody's reservoirs got filled up and ground reservoirs as well.
Yeah. Yeah, it looks like our lake's going to fill and it's going to spill this year, so we can maybe do a little rafting before farming season starts.
There you go.
Yep.
So are you a fisherman at all?
I used to fish quite a bit, but with farming and rock crawling and rock racing, I got where I didn't get to do it. But I'm hoping to get to do some more fishing now that I got grandkids.
That's my goal as well.
Yep,
I haven't fished in years, and I really want to fish.
My granddaughter is 7, the first one. My other one will be 5 in June, and then my grandson will be 2 in June on my birthday is when he was born.
Oh, nice.
Yep, and all he wants to do is drive tractors.
Well, that's a kid thing, that's for sure. There you go.
Yeah.
And you got to have one to take over the family business, right?
Right, yep. Yeah, definitely. Well, I know my son and daughter both love to farm, but it's so pretty hard to make a living and at the salaries they're used to making compared to what we make. Yeah.
True.
Not near as well as good as what, you know, people think, but it's a great life.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the things that's happening nationwide with farms and ranches is that the next generation coming up either just doesn't want to do it because of the, you know, it's what they've done as a kid and they're just not that interested in it. And they want to get out of the area. And then the big corporate companies come in and buy everything up. And it's, it really changes the American landscape.
Right. Yeah. And I think 60% of all farmers are in the age of mid 60s right now. So, you know, mid 60s to late 60s. So there's going to be a lot of retirement farms here in the next few years. And who can afford to pick up farms these days?
Corporations.
Yep. And when back east, I was looking, I don't remember if it was Arkansas or where it was at here recently, a farm there sold for $19,999 an acre. That's a chunk of change.
Yeah.
And I can't remember how many acres that corporation bought. Couple thousand. But yeah.
Yeah, that kind of sets up the retiring farmer pretty well at that point.
Yeah, but it doesn't do much for the young farmer that wants to, the young person that wants to farm.
True.
Very true. Yeah.
Just got to keep it out of the hands of the Chinese.
Exactly. Yeah. And I don't know why our country allows foreigners to be able to buy land in this country when you can't buy it in theirs. Especially where it is a food product for the United States to survive on.
Agreed. Agreed. Without getting too political, right. I just say we just need to take it all back. Tell them to go pound sand.
I hate politics anyhow.
So do I.
I don't even watch the news. And I sleep much better at night.
Yeah, you sleep better. You know, you're happier. There you go.
Yep. I don't worry about anything. Yeah. It's like no matter what happens, there's nothing I can do about it.
True. So true. That's what Shelly keeps telling me. And I keep going, did you read this? And she's like, no, I don't want to. And I get it.
I sat down one day thinking about, and don't get this wrong, California, but how the population in California, it takes Colorado, Arizona, New Mexico, Kansas, Nebraska, Wyoming, Idaho, Montana, Oklahoma, Utah to equal the population in the state of California.
The state of confusion.
All those states, no matter how those states vote, Arizona California control, you know, all these other states.
Right.
At the national level. That's scary.
Yeah, it is. And then if you just take the three major populated areas in California, they're the ones that control it all anyway. I mean, you know, because you get outside of the, out of those major metropolitan areas and it goes from being blue to red.
Right. Yep. Well, and when I saw that, then I thought, when I saw the numbers, you know, population wise, I thought, so no matter what I do here, it's not going to make a difference. So that's why I quit watching the news and stuff.
Stay happy.
I hate to say it. So yeah, almost like your vote doesn't count, but to a point.
Yeah. Unfortunately.
Now, if you're voting on rock crawling, you know, that's a different story.
So what?
Keep all parks open and all of our trails open.
Right. So what's on the horizon, Gersh? What are you hoping to do for the rest of your days?
Oh, I finishing up watching my grandson in sports this year. He's a senior. We've got another 3 weeks, and then that part of chasing him is over. We've had a great time for the last year chasing sports all over the country. So we'll finish that up. You know, we've got Lake Powell close. I've got a motorcycle, dirt bike that I haven't ridden near enough. We just have so much stuff to do here. I never get bored.
Good. That's a good thing. And Dermo, what about yourself? How many more years are you going to be sowing seeds out there?
Well, my brother, he wants to work till he's 70 to retire. And I told him when he retires, I got to retire because I can't do it all. So I'm thinking I only got another year or two, which is fine with my wife, Linda. She'd rather do a little traveling and stuff and enjoy the grandkids.
Excellent.
So that's kind of why we're building the cabin at Groundhog. So I can take the grandkids up there and have fun with them. Just enjoy it. See the mountains.
Perfect. Perfect. Yep. Well, on that, I would like to say thank you guys for sharing your history and, you know, talking about the early days of rock crawling with you guys and racing and, and life in general. Thank you.
Well, appreciate it, Big Rich. All I can say to everybody is just think outside the box.
There you go.
Thanks for the opportunity, Rich.
Yep.
Yeah, no worries. And thank you.
And can I put one more thing in?
Absolutely.
BZ, step up, boy. Do the interview.
He says he told me, he goes, you know, I'm just more of a private individual right now. Nobody needs to hear me talk.
Oh my gosh. You sure he was healthy then when you talked to him?
Yep. Sure was.
Okay. By the way, did you happen to see him on Undercover Boss?
Yes, I did. Hilarious.
Wasn't that hilarious? They said they had to cut out, what was it, 80% of all of his jokes. The guys that were filming said they've never laughed so hard the whole time, but they had to cut out 80% because it wasn't fit for TV.
Doesn't surprise me at all.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
What a character that guy is.
Yeah. Oh, I miss all the guys crawling, you know. Yep. And my thing is too, Big Rich, I see somebody and I can't remember the name. I know their face, but I just cannot remember their name for the life of me.
I get it. I have so many people come up to me. Well, I had a guy today. It was a friend. Well, it was the guy that I first went wheeling with back in 1982. First time up in the Sierras in a CJ5. And I handed him one of our magazines and he goes, "You're Rich Klein, right?" And I'm like, "Yeah." And he goes, "Hey, it's Buck Teasley." And I'm like, "Oh my God." You know, I hadn't seen him in, probably 20 plus years. Probably closer to 25 or 30.
Has he aged well?
Yeah, actually he had.
Said
he told me he was 86 now, and then I realize how old I am.
86. Wow. Yeah.
Yep. Still wheeling.
Wow. Still wheeling.
Yep.
Yep. Yeah. I sold my last Samurai last year that I had, and my granddaughter's really mad at me because it was yellow and she loved it. So I ended up getting with an old Bronco now, 67 Bronco.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Very nice.
And barn find.
Oh, yeah? Uncut?
Yeah. Uncut.
Ooh, nice.
And I've been looking for an old Bronco that I could afford, looked everywhere, and it was in a hay barn. I mean, in a barn a quarter mile from my house, and I had no idea it was there. Been sitting there for 18 years.
Wow.
Had a rubber garden hose over the hood and full of dust. And we drug it out, put a battery in it, and the brakes needed fluid, so I dumped some brake fluid in it. And I thought, I was going to have my brother pull me to see if we could start it. And I thought, you know, I better just turn it over with the battery and make sure that it's not locked up. And I smelled the gas in the tank, and it stunk so bad. So I poured 1 gallon in of regular gas that I had. I hit the starter, and it was running. I couldn't believe it. 18 years it sat there.
So luckily it was indoors.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that barn. Well, it was kind of indoors.
Okay.
That roof leaked. Awesome. Got my wife. We went to town and it died on us. Something was in the fuel tank, plugged the line. So I got drugged to the gas station. I put fuel in the other tank and changed the valve so it would start. Fired up. I've been driving it ever since. So. It's a classic.
That is awesome. That is awesome. Okay, now I got to ask, what color is it?
It's that light green that they made in 67.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. It's rusted under the door panels in the quarter panels there. And the inside two fenders, there has a rusted spot about 6 inches in diameter, and that's it. Rest of it's unreal. Yeah. Still got the original seats in it, the headliner, everything.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
And the tires on it are dry rotted,
And everybody said, oh, you need to put new tires on it. I think these tires are better than the new ones you get. You can still drive on these. They don't leak. And they're up. They've been up the whole time. He's never put air in them.
Wow. So. That is insane, that right there. Okay.
Yep.
All right, guys. Thank you very much. And I'll let you guys know when this is going to air. Thank you.
Oh, cool. Cool. Appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
Okay. Thanks, Big Rich. All right. Take care.
You guys take care. Hey,
is the finals here in Farmington this year?
Yes, it is.
It is. Okay. Yep.
Come on over.
I wanted to go last year and we were out of town. So I'm going to try to go this year and watch.
Sounds good. Hope to see you there.
Okay. Sounds good. Take care.
Bye, guys. Bye.
Bye.
Well, that's another episode of Conversations with Big Rich. I'd like to thank you all for listening. If you could do us a favor and leave us a review on any podcast service that you happen to be listening on, or send us an email or a text message or a Facebook message, and let me know any ideas that you have, or if there's anybody that you have that you think would be a great guest, please forward the contact information to me so that we can try to get them on. And always remember, live life to the fullest. Enjoying life is a must. Follow your dreams and live life with all the gusto you can. Thank you.